We are recording.
I'm dealing with demonic myself.
Okay, we are recording.
I identify with a little kid. All right, never mind.
Okay.
Right.
We are, okay. First card in fire, in the position of fire, is the Hierophant. Second card in the position of water is the universe.
Uh-huh.
Third card in the position of air is the Four of Swords, aka Truce.
Okay, yes, we've come up several times.
Yeah. And the fourth card in the position of earth is Princess of Discs.
Which is a big deal in the Taftarah.
Yeah. And the fifth card in position of hidden motivation is Three of Cups Abundance. The sixth card in outcome is the Emperor. Arc of Influence, Queen of Discs, Eight of Swords Interference, that's the AKA, Two of Swords, AKA Peace.
Eight of Swords was...
Interference.
Interference.
I will say one thing. I keep a tally of, say for instance, when I do a spread, I have all my, if I don't have the image, I scan it in to my folder. And at least I don't have to always scan in images. These cards all have appeared before.
Yeah. Now, was it the last one was the Two of Swords?
Yes, Two of Swords. Peace.
And the designation.
Oh, that's the ninth card.
In the Rock of Influence.
Mm-hmm.
No, the name that goes.
Oh, peace.
And now we will be getting cards that have appeared before. I mean, statistically, I think that's, well, David, you would know better than me.
I didn't count.
Statistically, we will start getting repeat cards. It's just the way it is. Now, a repeat spread, that would, I think, be very unusual, or more unusual.
If I count the images, I would have to count all the cards that came out so that we would know.
Well, how would it signify, except as a summation effect of what came before, and this being some sort of, you know, this would be, in my mind, perhaps a key chapter.
Let's look at the cards we've got. The first one is fire, the Hierophant, and we know we're in. What's it called? We know we're in Tepera, which is the fifth Tepera. Is that right? And that's also the sun.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's number six. It's the sun.
Okay. I mean, it's not Tepera. It's number six, but it's in that place, that central place of the sun. I guess it's sticking a chakra or whatever. And then we've got the Hierophant. We have the universe, are all major, and we got the Emperor.
Is the universe water, Johanna?
Yes.
The universe is in water. Yeah. So those both seem like, you know, and we're meeting the Holy Guardian Angel, which, of course, which is the only inner guide we meet, and of course, the first one is the Hierophant, which could represent the Holy Guardian Angel.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
And also, we have the Princess of Discs, which could also, let's see if we can, and we've got the, what doesn't seem to show up here very much, except maybe with the Queen of Discs or the Princess of Discs, is what's going on in Malkuth with Sunny Baskerville and Stacia.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put the Princess of Disc on Baskerville.
Huh?
I wouldn't put the Princess of Disc relating her to Sunny Baskerville.
Yeah.
But she's about Revelation.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah, I agree with you, generally speaking. But, you know, we got the Eight of Swords, but, you know, but that's the Arc of Influence, so I don't usually, I count that sort of more towards the future. Let's look back up.
Well, the Emperor card is interesting because we're in Trefereth.
We have we have in last week's spread, and I know that some of you.
I'm sorry. Where was the Emperor?
It's number six. Was the Emperor? The outcome.
Here we are. Yes. I see it now. I wrote it down, but I couldn't find it.
Now last week's spread. No. Right now, this is so. This is not, obviously, not the spread that we've got in front of us. But the Arc of Influence was the Prince of Discs, the Three of Swords, Sorrow, and the Four of Swords, Truce.
Mm-hmm.
That really more looks like the Sunny Baskerville's Grace Stacia situation. And, of course, that was over the future outcome, which was Four of Cups lecture. That's from last week. But I just thought that, I mean, that looks like it addresses that issue more than does what we see here, at least particularly on the central line, which is the elemental line of the Hierophant universe, Four of Swords, Princess of Discs.
And again, no wands.
Right.
No wands. I mean.
Right. That's strange.
And very little water too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is fire with the Emperor.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think also the issue with the sun and with the gold is that fire is in a lot of ways dominating. But again, with no wands, it's an interesting.
So I always think of the pentacles as being a summation of fire, water, and air, depending on the card, but particularly with the court cards of the pentacles. We have the Queen of Pentacles here, and universe, and I don't know, that's just the way I've come to.
Yeah, well, the Princess of Pentacles in the area of Earth is actually a what you call an integration,
correct,
and of all the elements, and also what is it, so you have a position of, this is truly a position of initiation, having the Princess of Discs or Pentacles in Earth. When you look at the storyline and it being in that position, it's very interesting.
And it's very important that she's in the position of Earth as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, yeah, because it exalts it more because it is in the position.
And also the swords is in the position of air,
right,
and that exalts it too. So there is some sort of understanding, I believe, coming about that brings her to that.
And number Eight of Swords is in position eight,
mm-hmm,
and Four of Swords appropriately is in the position of air. And, of course, 8 is twice, so the arc of influence, I don't know, to me, with 2 of swords following in 9, numerically, in some strange way, it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that's going to come up as when we are going to start reading in a minute is there is, Stacy, it does have a vision of Barbara of the two Prometheas in Geburt, which is in the future. It's the next chapter, chapter 18, where they actually are is in Tipperah, which is an interesting switch in time. So, and of course, one of the things that comes up is stated in the places that, you know, we're sort of outside. We're moving outside of time now, at least in terms of sequence.
Yeah, I think it speaks more to the power of Tiferet, the fact that it has this timeless quality.
Yeah. So shall we? Shall we begin our reading of Promethea, chapter 17, Gold, Malkut? Anybody want to explain those pictures? For Sam's dialogue.
I didn't understand what the man at the top of the page there. Where did that come from?
He's Mayor Baskerville.
Yeah, she did a number to Mayor Baskerville. He's gone. She couldn't stand him. And we see him lying with the broken eyeglasses, obviously dead. In Malkuth.
And look at her cool boots.
Yeah, those are boots in which I always pass up in the old TJ Maxx. I'm saying, should I buy those boots or don't? Shouldn't I buy those boots? And, of course, this is Stacia, Amazon Promethea.
Yeah.
Amazonian Promethea, tattooed and all, going through, was it a building of some sort?
And now we're through. She's through the building, and there's this person.
Having no mercy.
Please.
Right.
Please help. Please.
What's the last two panels though?
She's having no mercy. She's even killing security people.
She with her sword? She's sort of zapped him with electricity.
I don't know. He's floating in the air with a lot of snakes.
Somebody, please, please help. Okay, this is Stacy.
Now, this is a figure of a woman.
All right. God, oh God, somebody help us.
Please, somebody help us. Please.
Hello?
Hello. Hell. Death.
Three Kings, that's rather a good hand, darling, but we both know you've got more hidden up your sleeve. I guessed right, didn't I? You got the entire howling in there. It must be beastly.
Not at all. Sonny's loving every minute, aren't you, Sonny? There he is, speechless out of joy. Now, Miss Bragana, Miss Vandeville, the region Asmodei, up on my left has a message for you, Your Infernal Highness. I am happy to be of assistance.
Grace? Jesus! Grace, is that you?
Grace, as Asmodeus has us, we're trapped in the Kippoleth of Gabora, and we can't get out.
Barbara? Sophie?
Promethea Gold!
Everything... Emma, that's me. Everything's so still and peaceful, like just before dawn. This is beautiful.
This is beauty. Oh. This is what Tiferet means. Beauty, harmony. It's like the sun. It's the point of balance all other spheres revolve around.
Now, the mandala can go either way.
Oh,
ESL or Widdershin.
Okay, Barbara, do you want to go like a clock?
Yes, let's do like a clock, okay? Let's start at, I would say,
the
9 o'clock.
The world goes round.
Yeah, 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And above?
Well, it would be 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock would be...
We're going to start at the top of the page.
Okay, top of the page. Okay, this... Then...
I think it's Sophie Promethea talking.
Wait, no, that's Barbara.
That's Barbara.
You have the jagged little balloons. I have the smooth balloon.
Right.
Okay? Then, this self's our immortal part, our soul, what dies? It's bodies, worldly ideas, lower stuff like that? So where does the soul go?
Some say we reincarnate. Jump back on the wheel of karma.
Is that true?
Perhaps some believe that this is heaven and that we stay here. After all, it's the highest human point in the Kabbalistic system. Others believe we merge into one eternal spirit, one self.
Hold on. Highest human point?
Yeah. The Tree of Life arranges a circle representing the celestial with a cross beneath it, representing worldly existence. Tiferet's mankind's highest point and God's lowest, where the two connect.
The spheres as low as God descends into, I don't know, the universe?
Absolute God's the highest sphere above existence. Tiferet's God born into existence as man, as his own son, I guess, humanity's highest point.
I can't believe that. Everything here feels like timeless.
I think it's only our worldly minds that order events into sequences, into past, present, and future. God's eternal. We're feeling God's timelessness even down here. It's timeless and golden. Tiferet's where we encounter our holy guardian angel, our highest self. And like the visionary Emanuel Swedenborg said, angels know nothing of time. For our highest self, every moment is eternal. On the Tree of Life, the sixth solar sphere is the self, the soul, our true will. Tiferet's part of the celestial circle. Doing our true will is doing the universe's will.
Everything's so golden here.
Yes, this sphere is the gold that alchemists sought. Discovering it is what magicians call the great work. It's what was written in Greek above the arch of the sun god Apollo's oracle at Delphi. Know thyself.
Know thyself. So that's what it meant. Above the archway, to really know this place, that's in all of us. This, I don't know. Holy place, it's like a seam of pure gold inside us.
Yes, it's a beautiful oasis we can revisit. A calm point at the center of things, at the burning lion's heart of us, where we find our will, our soul, where we know ourselves.
And this Tiferet place is our highest self, right? I knew it felt familiar. It feels like me, you know? It's like I've been here before. Do our souls' journey always return to the same places?
It all goes round and round. Planets orbit the sun like the parts of us that they represent. Orbit our central self. We're not our bodies, thoughts, or emotions. We're the self that has those things. It's all a circle. It's a golden circle going on forever.
Sophie, what you said about the place being heaven, or where everybody merges into one soul, or whatever. Well, what about Steve? I mean, if I find him here, will he still be Steve? The Steve I knew?
Well, you'd both be your true selves here, so I guess you'd both be different, but that's okay. See, this place is beauty. And Einstein said, beauty is truth. What people are here, that's the truth. The beautiful reality. Life's a dream we wake from. Here, we're who we are in our hearts.
It's weird. One minute I'm filled with incredible joy, and the next, don't know, sorrow. I guess, although I can't tell where it's coming from.
I know. It's like clouds passing across the sun.
That's exactly what it's like. I keep thinking the light's changing, but it's me. It's inside me. Sophie, how come there's sorrow in heaven?
Well, if there weren't, it wouldn't be heaven. It'd be Disneyland.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. Even so, I expected more angels.
I don't know. I keep getting this feeling like this bright information, but it's so pure. It isn't about anything. It's hard to explain. I guess I just mean a sense of presence.
I know what you mean. This is a strange place. It's sweet and familiar, but then it's like being on some mountaintop inside yourself in the wind and light. You know, sort of scary.
Yeah, it's almost like being naked or something. Naked in your bare soul. It feels good, but it feels vulnerable. Like, oh geez, Barbara, look there.
Is that... It's a little kid. What she's doing here? You know, she's sort of familiar.
Don't scare her away.
What, you think I can't hear you stomping through the grass like a couple of freaking elephants, man? Hey, Barb, gotta say, you break me up in that hat. What is that, girl?
Huh? You know me?
Well, it's gotta be 20 years since you looked good in a frickin' rah-rah skirt, that's for frickin' sure.
Hey, wait a minute, who are you?
I'm her holy frickin' guardian angel, brat butt. My name's Boo Boo Ramirez, who the frick are you?
The angel Boo Boo?
Oh, God. Sophie, it's me. When I was 15, everybody called me Boo Boo. It's, oh, God.
Hey, baby, don't cry. Who the fuck was you expecting your angel to be if it ain't me?
Oh, geez, you're so beautiful. And look at you. You're all strong. You don't take no crap from anybody.
Hey, I'm here, okay? I've always been here. You knew that, right? Oh, come on. You were looking for that skinny-ass husband of yours.
You know where Steve is?
Nah, not exactly. The cartoon book guy thinks he's a frickin' wizard straight off the frickin' cereal box, right? My guess? He won't be satisfied here. Guys who think they're wizards always gotta climb higher, freaking macho asshole.
I'm Sophie, incidentally. I'm Barbara's friend.
Hey, I know who you are. I was just kidding earlier. I know everything she knows. It's just she doesn't know everything I know. You're okay, Sophie. The old lady here, she needs a homie like you.
Will you meet my holy guardian angel here?
Maybe not. Maybe you're already wearing your holy guardian angel. You ever think about that? Maybe Sophie Bangs' highest self right now, that's Promethea. That's this Promethea deal you guys got going on.
I trust her, Soph. She's always knew what she was talking about.
Yeah, maybe I did. Except with the boys. Anyway, there's more to this place than just meeting angels, baby girl. Trust me. There's the four sixes and all the princes. There's the vision of harmony. There's the risen gods.
And I guess they're all a part of understanding the sphere, right?
You bet your ass. Everything here is full of meaning. Everything represents something. It's like one of them philosopher guys said, just about ordinary human life and what it's like. Man walks through a forest of symbols.
Those are the four tarot princes. And all four sixes, they're all allocated to the Sephiroth, right? And in that center, that's Apollo.
That's right, god of the sun, god of music and harmony.
The tarot sixes all look so benevolent. Success, science, pleasure, victory.
I want to hear about Apollo. He's gorgeous.
Well, he did a pretty freaking good job running the Aegean region all them centuries back.
What do you mean?
I mean, none of them Greek city-states made a move without consulting Apollo's oracle at Delphi, right? So there's the priestess, the Pythia. She's some teenage chick sitting there stoned, okay? She's like on this pillar in all these fumes, yeah, maybe hemp and stuff. She's out of it, man. She's talking all this garbage, but like everybody takes it as instructions straight from Apollo.
Boy, that must have been a disaster with some teenage stoner running things.
The god Apollo, that's who was running things. So it was a progressive, enlightened, mostly pacifistic era like you'd expect. I mean, think about it. Everything works for years and years. Apollo governed things, and he did great. So, like, what's it matter if it was really, if he was really there or not? You get what I'm saying?
I think so. It's like Apollo's not just the god of human enlightenment and harmony. He's the essence of those things. He's human harmony itself, where it is. He is.
Sure. Just like Aphrodite is human love or Hermes is human connection. I mean, this ain't freaking rocket science.
What about these guys up ahead here? What are they the essence of?
These are like the risen gods. It's like the sun. It goes away every night, then in the morning it rises. It's reborn. Mr. Goodbuns here, that's Balder. Balder the Beautiful from the Northland. He gets killed by Loki, who's the god of freaking wit, people. But then after Ragnarok and all that, ta-da! Baldur's reborn. It's because he's beauty, see? He's forever.
I heard of Baldur. What about this guy? Looks like he should be selling sweet corn.
Oh, this is my man, Addis. He was so cute, the goddess Sibel castrated him so nobody else could have him. Addis dies, then comes back as trees and flowers and stuff. Finally, during this famine in Phrygia, Sibel revives him as a crop god.
So he's a symbol of return, like the solar deities.
Well, Addis is more like Dionysus here. In the Orphic myth, Zeus screws Demeter's girl, Persephone. She squats a little Dionysus, okay? Zeus's old lady Hera, she hires these titan goons to tear the kid to bits and eat him. All they leave is his heart. Athena, she gives this to a mortal woman, Semele, who eats it 9 months later. Dionysus is reborn.
Reborn like the vine he symbolizes. Who's this next one? He looks Egyptian.
And morbid. All these symbols of death and decay in a place like this, all that rot, it's sort of profane. Is that the word? But I don't know. Maybe the fact it's here means that, well, that the profane is kind of sacred too. Does that make sense?
Barbara, that's like really profound. Wow, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
That was for you, Paul. Oh, yeah. See, crucifixion. No. Oh, sorry, I guess you do go first.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, yeah, see, crucifixion, it wasn't just like executing somebody. It was something you'd do to a dog.
Oh, God, I can't look at it.
To a dog, man, a freaking dog. It was degrading. It was humiliating. And they did it to him, You get it?
I understand with these. Oh, God, I understand.
Our highest point, the best in us, the gold, and it's nailed rising on the cross of the world. That's us up there, man. But even down here, at the lowest Auschwitz ass end of what humans are, or what humans do, our highest point is still here with us. There's light. Always remember that. There's light at the bottom.
Now, how do you read this? Down the page, I suppose, right?
Yeah, this one goes down.
God, you see all the pictures and the icons, but I think he really existed.
No, that ain't important whether he really existed. What's important is that he exists. What he means, the symbol, that's true, that's real, that's happening right now.
You know, so much, I guess you're walking with us away, then split like Austin did, huh?
Hey, he's some magician wanted to get in your pants. I'm your holy frickin' guardian angel, dumbass. I'm with you for the duration.
And how long's the duration?
Depends. Your hubby thinks he's a wizard. He's probably gonna try climbing the tree by the lightning bolt route, what they call the sword.
What's that?
Well, it's how the energy descends into the universe, into being, from God, and moves down through all the spheres from 1 to 10, from the Godhead down to the physical existence in the zigzag path.
Hey, everything's changing color.
Yeah, this is Highway 22 coming up. Like I was saying to Barb, what magicians do, they follow the downwards lightning bolt, but backwards. This is the path cartoon book guy would probably take, from Sphere 6 up to Sphere 5.
But if this sphere's like the highest human point, then what's above it?
Well, the lowest 5 spheres, you're talking about human things. Flesh, dreams, mind, emotions, spirit. And the 6th sphere, you're looking at big universal qualities, universal will, universal love.
And what's above that? What's above universal qualities?
Hey, let's cross that bridge when we come to it, okay? Let's cross that bridge when we get there and you find out there ain't no frickin' bridge.
Hey, look! Are those elephants? Cynthia.
Yes, I think they're animals sacred to, what is this, the 22nd path? Justice?
Used to be. Aleister Crowley called it adjustment. He said the universe ain't just, but it's precise. It's precisely adjusted and balanced.
So what's the next sphere?
The 5th sphere, it's the sphere of Mars. It's red and it's fiery. When energy descends into the tree of it, when energy descends the tree into being, the 5th sphere is where any impurities, being unworthy, gets destroyed. This justice path leading to it sort of tells you its nature. The 5th sphere is called Gevura. That means strength and judgment.
Next week, panic in Manhattan, hell on earth. Havoc in Heaven, Life on Mars. Ta-da. Thank you. That was a wonderful reading, you guys.
It was. It was really good.
Thank you.
I love the Holy Guardian Angel. She's adorable. You did a great job, Joy.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
you
did.
Thank you for jumping in, too.
So,
And you had a youthful enough voice to do the Holy Guardian Angel also. That's what's great about it, Joy.
I'm sorry, what?
You have a youthful enough voice. It fit your, you know, compared to us old ladies here.
Well, I don't know about it. I think one of the things about the Holy Guardian Angels that probably anybody could have really done that, because there's a universal quality to it. But it was fun. It was definitely very, very fun to read.
It's interesting that Moore has it at a point of adolescence when you're just going, you're not tainted by the world yet, in the sense of going by the world's values, that you are your true self.
Right, yeah.
Before we get molded into the Hierophant's way of doing things, you know. The law, the social law. Very interesting.
Yeah, I want to talk about the
I think that would be more
the Holy Guardian Angel issue, but before we do that, I wanted us to look a little bit at some of these pictures. Specifically, I wanted to point out to you the four Dali pictures that come up in the PDF file.
Yeah.
Starting on page 219 and going through 222. These are, and Dali was the inspiration visually for this, for some of the iconography in this version of, and these are some of Dali's Eucharist paintings. I don't know their exact name. I think they actually are named on page, let's see. Yeah, they're painted. The first painting, the one on 219, is Dematerialization Near the Nose of Nero. It was painted in 1947. And then the...
was Dematerialization
near the Nose of Nero. Yeah, the names are on page 223 at the top of the page.
So his nose is falling off his face. Let's see.
And, but you can also see the heart here, and the altar, and the broken bread. And it's obviously some kind of fruit bread, apparently, because it looks like it has pomegranate fruit in it, or on it.
What do the inkwells represent, do you think?
With Dali. Yeah, it could represent
David,
the four gospels. The four gospels.
What those inkwells meant.
Huh?
The inkwells, what they meant.
The four gospels.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But I'm not. No, that's off the top of my head guess. So
I think it's a very good guess, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do.
Then the next one, which is the completed version of the, which is the is called the Madonna of Port Legat, and it's in. It's the first version, and then a detail. So this is a first version of it. And so, you know, this looks like it might have an issue of the Annunciation, in that the Christ could still be in her womb. You know, so in other words, we're having a thing where the embodiment is in process, and of course the Sacred Heart. The child, infant of the child. Of course, now we have a second version of this same picture, but here in this case, it's another version because you can see that the Christ child is quite different.
What do you think the sea urchin shell means? The fish is obvious, but I don't know. I guess
Again, Venus and the goddess and creativity, the oceans of the womb. That's how I would look at it. And as you can see here in this picture, the Christ child is not as fully embodied yet. You have there looks like there's a ball which looks like it has the symbol within it of Venus, you know, which is the globe with the and then he's carrying, of course, a cross as a scepter, and then there's another ball that's around him, and he's looking down, and he has this square where his chest would be, an open square, it looks like.
That's kind of the traditional emperor ball and cross.
Good point. You know, and of course he is. You know, he's. And her cupping her hands over him is the spire of a church, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the symbol for Venus is what appeared in the article on Tiferet when they hit it on the floor when she's talking about the celestial world and the physical world.
Right.
And beauty.
Yeah. And so, moving to 221, well, we have a version of another version of this thing. Here, of course, he has the ball, but the Venus carries goes, and in his chest, which is large now, and he seems to be holding a book. He's holding a book and a ball, and in his chest, where his heart would be, in the square, is a crust of bread, which is a Eucharist symbolism, obviously, pretty outrageously so.
You know, the bread of life.
And her... the Madonna's hands are also still making the steeple, but the fingers aren't together here. And then the last one, which is called The Path of Enigmas, first version, 1981. That's really late. I didn't even know Dolly. Yeah, I guess he was. He was still alive in 81. So,
did he know Crowley, do you think? Had they met?
That's not known. I don't know. I doubt very much, considering how narcissistic both men were, and how derisive Dolly was to everything. He's identified as a surrealist, but the official surrealists hated him and didn't recognize him at all as part of their school. They say he was off. Yeah, you know, he was just doing his own thing, but he was extremely popular.
So, are those bags of grain coming from the sun, or are they moving toward the sun?
Yeah, no way of knowing, huh?
No way of knowing.
Yeah.
I will tell you, one of the most emotional experiences I had was seeing Dolly's crucifixion, which hangs at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Well, we're actually going to flip down to that. We're going to skip over the demon stuff for a while and go down to the ascent and descent of the crucifixion.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is at the Metropolitan?
The
know?
One with Madonna. The second one.
The second one.
Yes.
The ascent.
Oh.
So here's the descent, which is on 230. And I mean, this is actually, as you know, is a very interesting depiction of the crucifixion. And I don't know if it's been stylization if it's occurred anywhere else. I just don't know. I don't know enough about art history. But the perspective is
beautiful.
The descent of Christ. and emphasizes the darkness, the sort of descent into hell, and also the darkness of matter, you know. And then, and I think quite interestingly, in a way, and then with the one on the bottom, which is the ascent, where you have Christ and you have the Madonna looking up at him, what I think is one of the things I think is really interesting is that there is no, is that he deliberately doesn't paint the face in either picture.
And there's no nails.
Suffering Christ. Huh?
There are no nails.
Yeah.
It's just,
there
on the feet.
There are square marks, though, yeah.
Yeah. There are no, it doesn't show any nails. He did not depict blood like the German school. Oh, the German school was really gross, grotesque in their depictions of the, between the time. There was a period in the German school that was really, twisting and gnarling of limbs and things like that.
There's a very powerful. I've only seen reproductions of it, but it's an extremely powerful cosmic Christ a painting on crucifixion, in which Christ's head is like a profound glowing orb of the sun. It takes up the whole picture. Does anyone know the one I'm talking about?
I have.
Out of the German.
No, that wouldn't be the German ages. School.
Huh?
That wouldn't be the German school. The German school was really, let me see, Cosmic Christ? Let me see if I could.
Yeah, it's a Cosmic Christ that's in which the head as a crucifixion is totally englobed in the sun.
Mm.
It's very, very intense, and it's definitely out of the Middle Ages, and it's definitely considered one of the great masterpieces. Like in that famous art history book by Abrams that was done for years and years and years that everybody used to consult. I'm pretty sure it had a reproduction of it.
Hmm.
But I think now what's interesting with the crucifixion on page 232 is the it's on the pillars of the blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in terms of this four-dimensional cube, sort of like cubes of a cube.
Right.
That, I think, is an interesting take on it from the point of view of vertical and horizontal.
This falls four Gospels, too.
Yeah. And and of course the Christ at St. John of the Cross, which is painted 1951, and the last one is called the Crucifixion Corpus Hypercubus. Two thieves visible are the cobble-colored Sephiroth behind him. I'm reading this off of page 233. Two thieves visible are the cobble-colored Sephiroth behind him. Malkut is at his feet, Yesod at his waist. Hod and Netzra are at the end of the cross, and on top of the cross is Tiphereth. Note the parallels between these pages and another Alan Moore work called Snakes and Ladders. And then there's a quotation from Snakes and Ladders. And then the next thing that's discussed is the lightning bolt path. This is at the bottom of page 233. Somebody want to read that note aloud?
Lightning bolt sword path is shown dividing the two pages. This is explained in a manuscript of Crowley's disciple, Frater Akkad, alias Charles Stansfield Jones, called The Bride's Reception, being a short Kabbalistic treatise on the nature and use of the Tree of Life with a brief introduction in a lengthy appendix, 1922, as follows. Quote, now there is another matter in which the formulation of the tensephora emanating from the one light may be expressed, and this without unduly confusing the reader, I desire to show, since it illustrates in an able way the dual nature of each sephira. This is called by the Kabbalists the lightning flash, and it connects the tensephora as shown in the following diagram.
And then you can continue reading after the diagram.
It is also known as the flaming sword, which is united with the idea of the serpent of wisdom, as will be more fully explained later on. This idea is useful as showing how each sephira receives a certain influence from the preceding one, and in turn transmits its nature to the following. On the left-hand page, approaching Route 22,
yeah, that's another note.
Okay.
But, you know, it makes sense. It's just showing what, that Route 222 is the way of getting through, up there through adjustment. So, now, does anybody know from their own readings or experience anything about ascending the lightning bolt, which is usually seen as a descent? Does anyone have any knowledge of or opinion about using that as the ascent, which is being done here in this story?
Well,
it's not a leading question. I don't have an answer.
Well, that's when you do path working, that's where you start. You know, there are meditations that take you through the lightning path.
You know, I have a prayer that I say every single morning when I get up in the morning, and it's going up the tree of life. And I'll say it to you so you can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I start off by saying, let us draw together, and we're bringing together all the worlds, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Let us draw together. Let us gather together. Let us form a vessel of heaven. Let us rise up to that holy place of meeting. Gather there with the companions of the light. Till of heaven be drawn back. Hear this. And then I go up the tree. Of food.
Did we lose you, David?
David.
I think we lost him.
You there?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, we lost you for a while. You said Malkut disappeared up the tree.
Up the tree. Then I go up the tree. Malkut, Yesod, Hod, Netzach, the Ferret, Gevurah, Hesed, Dot, Bina, Hokma, Keter. Lord, Thou art the Living Almighty. Thou art Yahweh Elohim, the Holy One. Thou art I Am. If it be Thy will, let Thy Holy Spirit descend upon us this day, that we may know Thy presence. And that's the prayer I say every morning.
Mm.
Now, is that following the lightning bolt up there?
Someone has...
Somebody got their...
Either their printer running or water running. Please mute yourself.
Pardon me?
No, someone, not you. Someone has either a printer running or a water running.
They've got water running in the background.
It might be me. Hold on. I have, star 6?
No, just mute yourself on your phone.
It doesn't have a mute.
Star 6.
Star 6, then.
Okay.
Okay.
It sounded like that sort of
way. So that was an interesting thing. We ascended the tree and we sounded like we were gargling. Now that
follows the lightning path.
Yeah, that is following the lightning path. That's what I wanted to clarify. Okay.
And at night when I go to bed, I go down the tree.
Hmm.
I close off my day.
Okay. Now, and
that's very nice. Can you type that up for us?
Yes, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And going at night, when I go down the tree, I say to myself, Most gracious God, Thou art Yahweh Elohim, Thou art the Living Almighty, Thou art the Lord. And I come down the tree, I say, Keter, Hokma, Bina, Dot, Hesed, Gevurah, Teferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malkut, Holy, holy, holy art thou, Lord God of hosts. Thy glory fills all the world. And that closes my day.
Yeah, please type it up for us.
Yes, I'll do that.
It's a good meditation also.
Yeah.
All right. So I, here I am.
I'm sorry. Would you, David, agree that in the Catholic tradition, in the Christian tradition, the Holy Spirit would be the Holy Guardian Angel?
Yeah, well, I don't
we're
know.
Going to deal with this right now. Since,
oh, okay, fine.
But we're going to deal with it with a little knowledge, which is a dangerous thing, I know. So to put it simply, the Holy Guardian Angel is not the Holy Spirit.
Okay.
Yep.
In a simplistic way, I mean, if you wanted to confound them, you could, but it wouldn't be unnecessarily helpful. Now, this is a contentious issue. What I read enough about...
The issue of Holy Guardian Angel versus Holy Spirit?
No. What is a contentious issue is what the Holy Guardian Angel actually is.
Oh.
Johanna?
Yeah.
Feel free to interrupt me.
I'm trying to find my Bornless ritual book. There is a...
Before you do, I want to say something about the angels. Was this an angel in the world of Yetzirah, or is it an archangel in the world of Bria, the Holy Guardian Angel, Paul?
What are you talking about again?
Well, the angels are found in the world of Yetzirah, and the archangels are found in the world of Bria. Kabbalistically.
The Holy Guardian Angel, off the top, should be dealt with as it is, and not try to integrate it into the archangel, regular angel hierarchy. I mean, there is a relationship, but it isn't one that
it's not part of a group. It stands alone. Yeah.
Would it be considered medicine?
Yeah. So in other words, everything you know about angels isn't necessarily relevant to this discussion, or what may be a discussion.
I know very little about the Crowley or Talamite.
Well, actually, if you hang on a second. And let me do what I've planned on.
You will know
a little more, okay?
Thank you.
Just hang on. Let me give you, and I'm getting this off of Telemite for Beginners, on the Holy, which is a series of quotations all by Aleister Crowley, in which he discusses the Holy Guardian Angel, what it is. And some of it's confusing. It's one of the reasons why it's confused. Quotation number one from Magic Theory and Practice, Chapter 1. There is a single main definition of the object of all magical ritual. It is the uniting of the microcosm with the macrocosm. The supreme and complete ritual is therefore the invocation of the Holy Guardian Angel, or, in the language of mysticism, union with God. All other magical rituals are particular cases of this general principle.
I'm sorry. Where did the Holy Guardian Angel come into that equation?
Well, yeah, we don't know yet. That's one quote, right?
Oh, okay.
Let me give you a couple of others. And then we'll have more to deal with, right? Another one. This is a book that he wrote towards the end of his life. So this is the same time he was doing the tarot cards. Magic Without Tears, Letter C, Introduction. The great work is uniting of opposites. It may mean the uniting of the soul with God, of the microcosm with the macrocosm, of the female with the male, of the ego with the non-ego, or whatnot. quote is from Lieber Samlath. This was done more towards the middle of his life. The angel is the truth, the logos or articulate expression of the whole being of the adept, so that as he increases in perfect understanding of his name, he approaches the solution of the ultimate problem. Who he himself truly is, the angel, which means the holy guardian angel, is the spiritual son of the soul of the adept. The angel is the true self of his subconscious self, the hidden life of his physical life. One of the things that I'm avoiding to a degree are the rituals, because if you look at the rituals that Crowley used to evoke or invoke the holy guardian angel, it can get that can be pretty confusing, because it's a kind of mixture of a ceremonial magic with a lot of emphasis on location, place, and space, and then a lot of emphasis on yogic meditation things. They're kind of mixed up together. Let's see. I hope this reading helps you guys orient you a little bit.
Okay. You know what, Paul? I listen to what you're saying here, and I'm looking at this diagram and the lightning flash. You can place that on our human body. You can place Hode at the left hip, mm-hmm. and Nutsack on the right hip. You can place Gevurah on the right shoulder, left shoulder, and Hesed on the right shoulder, and you can place the Bina at the left hemisphere of the brain, and Hokmah at the right hemisphere of the brain, and Keter at the crown. And that would place the six, it would place Tiferet at the heart. And I would think that's what he's talking about. The holy guardian angels is inside each of us, in our heart.
And it is in the heart, and yeah, and that is a key point. I agree with you. That is an extremely important point. That, yes, we are talking about the heart, and we are talking about a central aspect of the great work.
What came to me with the uniting of opposites, the great work, was, of course, alchemy. And what we know from lectures from Robert Place and our own readings on alchemy, which is very complex, but spiritual alchemy. Does that ring true to others as well, or am I alone in that?
We can use the alchemy thing, but I think it makes sense at this point not to try to deal with the transmutation of the holy guardian angel and how it creates a transmutation, but rather what it is. And where the contention seems to be is the holy guardian angel your higher self? And you have to recognize that, or is the holy guardian angel an higher self? In other words, it may not be your higher self per se, in other words, but rather is a higher self that is autonomous from you. And by you here, we're talking about one self-identified ego.
Could it be both?
That's an excellent question.
This is the crux of the thing. There are people who argue both sides of that question. I see it as it's kind of a chicken and egg question. It has to do with formulation. My position is the holy guardian angel is another self. When you are so grounded in your ego that you think your ego is yourself. When you meet your holy guardian angel, you go through a transmutation or a change, and at that point, your ego, the lower ego, dissolves in such a sense that you no longer think of yourself as a mere limited, autonomous, body-bound being with a unique history, that we call ourselves by. and you realize that you have this cosmic purpose and are integrated, and that yourself and the selves of the higher realms are not in competition. You know, so it's not an either-or issue. So one of the reasons why this is emphasized, so people who are still egotistical see the may see the holy guardian angel as one another self, being even another incarnate person with another history, or they may see the holy guardian angel as their higher self, meaning that they're going to transmute the higher self and with an intact ego.
As Alan Moore depicted,
looking at the treatment, I would say that Teferit is really a reflection of Keter, and that's the I am. Keter is the I am, and the thing is, you think if the higher self is being placed in Teferit, you'd say I am with a capital A. If you're at Yesod, you'd say I am with a small a.
That's a good point. In Promethea by Alan Moore, my take, and I am very ignorant of this material, except as Alan Moore presents it, I felt that the Holy Guardian Angel was definitely identified in the first definition with your higher self, in this case, Barbara's higher self.
She didn't recognize her higher self for a while.
Right.
And that once she becomes aware of who she was as Boo Boo.
Right. But my point is just to differentiate between these two very good points. I think Alan Moore, whether he just wanted to give us the baby version, maybe, I really don't know. But his take in this particular chapter of the Holy Guardian Angel was that it would be Paul's higher self, David's higher self, Joy's higher, etc., in our individuality.
Now, do you remember when Sophie said, well, am I going to meet my Holy Guardian Angel here?
Good point. Yes, I do.
And what did Boo Boo say?
Boo Boo says she is in her Prometheus self. She is her Holy Guardian Angel. They are united.
She doesn't say that the Prometheus self is the Holy Guardian Angel. She says it could be the Holy Guardian Angel.
Okay. Okay.
Good point.
Yeah.
Okay. So. So I just thought I'd be.
Thank you. That's very important. So
she should be. You're already wearing your Holy Guardian Angel.
Yeah. Let's characterize. What is the characteristics of a 15-year-old adolescent girl? Pot smoking, know it all. Come on, Joy. Get back into character. and remember our own 15-year-old adolescent personas.
What 15-year-old doesn't know everything?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Defiant. Yes.
There's
an aspect of defiance. But I have to go back to the Holy Guardian Angel speaking in the sense that the Holy Guardian Angel is your connection to the unknown Godhead.
Okay. So we're having it personified in this story primarily by Boo Boo. What do you think the purpose of Moore might be, or by having this relationship to Godhead being characterized by this, from my point of view, a newly hatched egotism of a 15-year-old, relatively newly hatched.
I think she's a reflection of Barbara. Barbara's a tough broad, and the thing is, her Holy Guardian Angel is going to be a tough person as well, I think. Identity of her true identity is going to be fairly tough.
I don't mean to be flip, but his readership was a young readership.
I think that what happened.
I don't know about that. I don't. The thing about a young readership is not it. I think. Like, no. Let's look at the characterization of the characters makes better sense than to think that he's pandering to his audience.
I think
this is where Barbara thought of herself as being at her very best when she was 15. She was at her very best. She could not be defeated when she was 15.
Also, it's the untainted self.
I agree. And that is right.
But this is also saying something that's really profound. To mystics, because, you know, you do have this incredible alchemical transformation that takes place in terms of your journey to God. And you know, there's, you know, and the whole issue of die before you die actually seems to take place around here, as we noticed from the path back in which they met death on the road and kind of got dismembered. But that in this particular case, what happens is that even though your ego is as it's developed in this life, is a very imperfect vehicle, and we are in any of us, it still carries with it, even in its imperfections, a kind of special quality that is not destroyed, but is actually perfected after this transmutation. So, in other words, when you begin to go through the transformation of with the conversations with the holy guardian angel, you become, your egotism, you don't become more egotistical, you become less egotistical, but you become more yourself. It's sort of unapologetically, I'm myself, which warts and all, you know. You know the limitations of, you know, the propensities of who I am. And those things which might have seemed like impediments, or even to ourself, become jewels of perfection.
So each of us has our own guardian angel, holy guardian angel.
Yes, each of us does.
Okay, Mother Teresa. And the Dalai Lama has his, and David Atwood has his, Paul Nagy has his. They're all different, but they're all for that particular individual.
Yeah, but I wouldn't over-individuate it, because one of the things that the Holy Guardian Angel does is it's bringing us beyond in the individual. We're going into the universal now. And one of the things that happens in the universal is the self-other paradox that makes so much sense in the physical world is of utterly no interest in the universal worlds.
The boo-boo doesn't appear to be universal.
That is, but he'll. I think we'll see.
Yes, she is. We all go through her stage, whether boys or girls.
But
a transformation from chrysalis to butterfly during those, you know, if you want to get poetical, during those teenage years, but definitely emotionally and physically. And now he's placed it in a spiritual sense.
With the universal stuff, I don't want us to overemphasize the developmental. And this kind of goes against my own grain. When I was doing interviews with, you know, people of highly individuated people, one of the things I discovered about them is that in terms of their own understanding, in terms of their higher development, is they did not understand it developmentally. And this is, you know, this is people who could
because
have understood.
It's a nonlinear process?
No, it's not nonlinear. The linear sense of process makes sense for the lower dimension of individuality, but in the higher dimensions, when you're traveling with your holy guardian angel, when you're being transformed into a perfectly translucent, transparent, even invisible mirror between the microcosm and the macrocosm, so that they are utterly the same in a way. There's this. There's a an invisibility that seems to hold with it.
Hello?
You know,
please?
You know, its own characteristics, I guess is the way to say it. They're not, but don't see them as, seeing them as developmental, which is one of the faults of aspects of transpersonal psychology. It doesn't necessarily help. It's kind of trying to, it's trying to make as below above. You know, when they say as below, so above, as above, so below, it really is as above, so below. And so below does not rule as above, you know. And the developmental scheme is kind of like the puppet pulling the strings to waken the puppeteer.
Okay.
And, which, you know, in some ways is can't
That's
happen.
Beautifully put. No, I get that. But I still don't understand how the Holy Guardian Angel differs from how the Holy Spirit is described. How I understand the Holy Spirit is that it's when we are at our most creative in those moments, we are conduits for the Holy Spirit.
But we by, that you mean, by that, I mean you have a sense of feeling grace, right?
Yes, it's a sense of grace.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, feeling grace is not a thing. You could say that the Holy Guardian Angel is a function of the self, is a function of the transformation of the self, of a transformation of moving from the gravitas of the ego into the gravitas of the self. And the way this is done is through the Hierophant. And the Hierophant here represents the Holy Guardian Angel. And that could actually take us back to our reading for today, which starts with the Hierophant and fire, transformation, and then it goes to the universe. So we can see that the two beginnings, both in fire and water, which are sort of incompatible, we immediately have the function of the Holy Guardian Angel as Hierophant Universe. And the Four of Swords of Truce is an interesting way of putting it, because that creates in the Place of Swords and the Princess of Discs, the truce sort of sets up the world, and the world in this way is sort of a world of understanding in a way, at least the way we may be approaching it. I wouldn't necessarily say that Kephira is the Four of Swords, but and of course the Three of Cups is abundance. In this case, I also would read the Three of Cups as having that transforming thing. And then also the Emperor is the Four, relating to as a future outcome, relating to specifically the Four of Swords and Truce and the Princess of Discs. Does that make any sense?
You know, this reading makes very good sense to me, except for Crowley's little word for the Eight of Swords being interference, whereas I see it as, you know, the way I've worked with it is speed, things coming quickly.
The Eight of Swords is definitely deals with the issue of.
I'm thinking of Eight of Wands. I'm sorry. I apologize.
All right, Eight of Wands.
You know, the Eight of Swords. Okay. Hey, science people, don't you need an alternating current to create an alternating current? Don't you need interference of some sort?
Well, it creates an interference, alternating current.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it means sort of those positive, negative, negative, positive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. To create energy, you need interference.
Well, that's what causes the turbine to go around, right?
Or you could call it friction and something.
Plus, minus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that alternates from in terms of it being on and off, on and off. On
right.
And off.
And even computers, it's zeros, one, zero, one, zero, zero, zero. Yeah.
Code.
Yeah.
That's a very good point, Johanna. Yeah. From that point of view, yes.
So I'm looking at that as a way of using energy, the eight of swords.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're seeing it more as the mirroring thing of the microcosm,
right.
Macrocosm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
is pretty much all of the eights you can see is representing levels of.
Remember, the eight is the lemon scent, and it is and pure energy. So all the eights have that regenerative quality to them.
Well, and my view of reading the eights as the lemon scent is as a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Is the mirroring taking place, and there's so that there's a transference where you have one, you know, one as the other as the one. And yet there's also a difference. For instance, the mirror doesn't move when the image in the mirror moves.
Mm-hmm. And may I say, there's some great magic done with mirrors.
Yeah.
Oh, powerful stuff. Putting two mirrors by each other? Forget it.
Well, but it also, in terms of the classic views of the mystic and the the views of, like, detachment, where people talk about emotional detachment,
mm-hmm.
by talking about emotional detachment doesn't mean that you cease to reflect. It means that you realize that the reflection, in other words, the image, in itself is not moving.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you reflect back, you don't move. In other words, you identify with the stillness of the mirroring and not the reactivity of the image moving.
Which is very interesting, because that's one of my clients' biggest problems.
Yeah, it was a big problem for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we get involved in the reacting to situations, it's very detrimental.
Sure it is.
To our well-being.
Yes, yes. You know. Well, okay. You know, we don't have to, I don't think we have to necessarily solve the problem of the Holy Guardian Angel. Probably thought that and I've read a couple of derisive things about the higher self, that in some ways the higher self is a conceit. And the higher self was often, very often used a generation or so ago by theosophists.
Mm-hmm.
And, my position is that people should not think of their higher self. They should rather think of that they are their higher selves at root. You are your higher self. There is no, you are a continuity, from at the deepest root, you are identical with the divine. And at your, accidental of stumbling around here, you're just like the rest of us saps.
Yesterday I had a coaching client who was speaking in the language of the higher self and her lower self. And to me, what she said was very profound. I brought up the word willing, and it was very synchronous with her thinking at that moment. And she said to her, willingness for this particular creative endeavor, this next step she wanted to take, was from her lower self. And when I mentioned faith and trust in the process, she said, that would be my higher self. And I don't think of higher self as being a glib, new agey kind of thing. When I heard it reflected by her to herself in this way, it was very profound. It's when you repeat the words faith and trust as being from her higher self, and willingness, the verb willingness, as from her lower self, not demeaning the lower self, but just expressing what she felt.
I thought
that was pretty intense.
When I say that the higher self is glib, I'm talking about what Telemeister say about it. I'm also saying, I also wanted to allude to where the holy guardian angel concept came from. And it came from that book that's recently been reissued and completed in terms of translation, which is the Gromery of the Abraham the Mage.
I have that.
That's where the word for the Holy Guardian Angel arrives. At the end of the period, he invokes a being described as the Holy Guardian Angel who appeared to him or to a child employed by him, and who will write in dew upon the layman, which is placed upon the altar, and the oratory is filled with divine perfume, not the aspirin's tinkling. And then here's an interesting point that Crawley made at one point, which is Crawley felt that attaining knowledge and conversation was so important that he staked the claim that any other magical operation was, in a sense, evil. Chapter 4. As was said at the opening of the second chapter, the single supreme ritual is attainment of knowledge and conversation with a holy guardian angel. It is the raising of the complete man in vertical straight line. We could see that as the central pillar, I think. Any other operation is black magic. If the magician needs to perform any other operation than this, it is only lawful insofar as it is necessary preliminary to that great work. So in some ways, you're sort of saying if you don't individuate, you can't do higher magic. I would agree. People who are still...
What is higher magic, Paul, by their definition?
Well, actually, any magic. In other words, all magic is black magic if you yourself are ego-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Wicca tradition, they claim that intentions, if you have altruistic intentions, you can ameliorate this black magic luster. But what he's saying is really, as a magician, of course, which is different than a Wiccan, as a magician, if you aren't going through the process of individuation, and now I know I'm throwing Jung at you, but there is I think that the transformations of the Holy Guardian Angel in conversation are very similar to what you can see happening in the Red Book, if you bother to look at it.
Right.
And in terms of the process that Jung's going through, you can really see that and see what's taking place there. As I said, one of the things you see here is that, as I said, the ritual is confusing. Personally, I think that I see the ritual as confusing with this issue.
I'm a little stunned that Crowley became so pious.
No. You see, people have a misunderstanding of Crowley through his personality and his bad boy image. He was a great magician. He understood ego and how ego could destroy. If he was a flamboyant character because he liked being, you know, he liked to push the buttons of people.
Well,
that's another thing.
People disguise great evil under pious sanctimony.
Right, that's very true.
He grew up in a family which was totally repressed and sanctimonious, and had a an utterly unrealistic idea of what it was to be good. And a totally unrealistic idea of what it was to be human. In fact, they had no idea what it was to be human. He embraced his human side, including all of the traits which were considered suspects, such as lust and desire and you know, the vices as well as the virtues. Because the virtues don't make sense without the vices in a way. And he did this at a time when this was not understood in the general populace. Now, of course, we may be suffering from extremes of people just being totally enslaved by various degrees of their vices. But in terms of the great work, you can see him in this. Like it is, Magic Without Tears, chapter 83, this is about one of the last things he wrote. It should never be forgotten for a single moment that the central and essential work of the magician is the attainment of knowledge and conversation with the holy guardian angel. Once he has achieved this, he must, of course, be left entirely in the hands of that angel, who can invariably and inevitably relied upon lead him to further great step, crossing the abyss, which we're going to do in Promethea pretty soon, and it's also known as Da, and the attainment of the grade of the master of the temple. And, my view here is that one of the, like, I think, I know, when I talk about myself, I had a vision of what I thought enlightenment was as a child, I mean, as an adolescent. And then I went and got training from various people. And the training I got was good, for the most part. But one of the things it did is it kind of caused me to sort of distrust my own innate knowledge, which is what put me on the path in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did over time was I became aware that I needed to affirm the innate knowledge and allow it to guide me, and realize that the exterior training that I was getting was needed to be put in the context of my own innate understanding, that the innate understanding was truer than and always would be truer than anything else, anyone else could ever tell me, even no matter how true it was. In other words, it sort of had to go through this sieve of integration, which was this vision of enlightenment for me. That, I mean, I put it back at a give it a date, but it became like an inner touchstone.
Hmm.
And that worked for me. So I mean, I could go and be involved with dozens of different religions and take them all in, but they were always ultimately going to go through this sieve of this holy guardian angel kind of experience.
I would like to read something from Israel Rigardi.
Okay.
Original intent of the Bornless Ritual. The original contents of this ritual, while obscure historically, are patently coarse, crude, rudimentary and elemental, and very distant from the modern spiritual interpretation that many of us have become used to. It represents an excellent example of what Jung called anatodromia, a conversation from one point of view to its direct opposite. The original simple intention of this ritual was exorcism, to cast out a demon from the possessed person. In the words of Goodwin's original, "Hear me and drive away the spirit. I call thee the terrible and invisible God residing in the empty wind. Thou headless one, deliver such as one from the spirit that possesses him." The modern intent of this ritual, as developed within the Order of the Golden Dawn and eventually by Aleister Crowley, is quite remarkably the exact opposite. The purpose of the ritual, as we have already seen, is to open the mind of the aspirant by continuous and concentrated application, that he becomes conscious of, or, if you like, possessed by another spirit, the holy guardian angel. This we have already defined, but this is a very far cry from the intent of the original ritual as translated by Godwin over a century ago. So, and it's applied to the neophyte grade. etc.
I don't mean to ask a stupid question. You don't have to answer it if you feel it's inappropriate. But several people I've come across are describing being given channeled material.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that that is their holy guardian angel working towards, working through them?
You know, I think many people have to put an image into spiritual connection, whether it be...
That's very true, of course.
Yes, we have to ground it somewhere where we're comfortable. I had that direct experience, yes. I had that direct experience very early. And I found that I just couldn't deal with an amorphous being that I had to... and that's why I think the tarot does also. It grounds the energies and the information.
But we're still talking about channeling.
Yeah.
They didn't use the two people I have in mind that I was working with didn't use that expression, but the process, their creative process that they described to me sounded like channeling, where they would. At the same hour every evening, they would be writing in their journal, and this material would just flow through them. They were a conduit for the material.
What we were just discussing, that anadromia or whatever. I know the word. I haven't thought of it in years, but it's actually, and I don't know how to pronounce it. But that's what happens is in the psyche. There's a variety of polarizations take place in terms of as you get to know yourself. And one of the ways that you deal with healing that polarization is to have autonomous experiences. And these conversations with the Holy Guardian can feel like an autonomous experience. You know, the master will seem like another person, another thing. Other than myself, this is why the issue of saying the Holy Guardian is your higher self, when it'll really seem like a separate being with a separate history, is one of the issues. In the same way with a channeled material, though in some ways with channeled material, I don't know to what degree... it's hard to say because it has to do with to what degree the person is transformed by it. I personally think that the purpose of channeled material is for transformation. But there are a lot of people with channeled material who set it up in a static way. They don't allow themselves, their own selves, aren't necessarily... aren't hearing the message to change themselves.
Well, that happens in the Course in Miracles. Yeah, that happens in the Course in Miracles. The woman who was the actual conduit always distrusted, didn't understand, and so I was committed to finishing the work, but felt
She didn't believe it, but Ken Wapnick,
her partner at Columbia, did believe it, and he went forth and he brought it out into the world. My question
that's neither here nor there, because what happened is that both of those characters, both him and her, she didn't change to a degree, and she finished her life as she was going to finish it.
Right.
And he also, in certain ways, didn't fundamentally change either.
But he delivered the material to the world.
Well, which in itself has been problematic.
Oh.
I happen to have a group that meets within 2 miles of me that's been the longest continuous Course on Miracles group in the country.
I studied with Ken Wapnick, Paul. I was in his group. Certainly not the first group, but one of his continuing groups. And I found it to be very contentious.
It was. It is contentious.
And I had to leave. I couldn't take all that kind of
It is, and the reason it's contentious, because a lot of the people in the Course on Miracles are attempting to change their ego to their ego's vision of this higher good.
Yeah.
And that is a completely insane process.
You're right.
Even if you do understand it, it's a strange situation. It's a dualistic way of understanding unity.
I think you've described my experience with it in a group setting.
And the thing is the people who. I've got a couple of friends who are totally addicted to this Course on Miracles stuff. The guy who runs it has been running it longer than anybody else now alive. This particular group is completely nuts, and we can't stand each other. So I don't think they're the same group.
Do you mean that they were fighting about interpretation? What were they doing?
No, actually, people personalize it. Well, if this is so, why did this happen to me? And they repeat their backstory over and over and over again.
Oh, my God. It sounds like poor group therapy, you know?
It was just intolerable to me.
And then, of course, you have other people who will maintain facades of piety. I'm almost to the point where I'd want to be Aleister Crowley and want to poke pins in their bubble.
Well, obviously, then there's something wrong within the system. If that shows something terribly wrong.
No, Johanna, I would have to contradict you.
Or the people it attracts.
look at the way any holy book, I'm not saying it's a holy book, but presuming it's a holy book, any grace-filled book taken by a group is made contentious. Look at any church, any synagogue, any temple, anything. When people get together, they tend to make some chaos out of it, it would seem.
Anybody else got anything they want to say about the Holy Guardian Angel? I know I've been talking a lot.
Well, I have the ritual. I think everyone should read the ritual of the Bornless One, just to go through it, which is basically, since we're dealing with a ceremonial magician.
Is that it? Which regarding book is that in?
Liber Samketh. Samketh.
Oh yeah, that's the one that. I quoted a little piece of that earlier.
Yeah. You can get it online.
It's available online. But the thing is that reading that ritual can be very confusing. I think the real thing is that this is a process in which. Yourself is transformed from being exteriorly oriented to the world of time and space and its adjuncts of the imagination and understanding world being sense bound to where you are going to become reformulated so that you can also see the nature of the inner world without needing totally sensate analogs for its understanding. It is the universal levels, which is in which there are not true analogies exteriorly. And this is transforming you so that you can receive this higher imagination, you can call it in a way. So that's the difference between the universal and the particular being the sense-bound, sensate experience we have in the world. And it's not an either-or situation, but the nature of the higher realm is that it has its own level of experience, and the level of experience is different in a profound way very different than the way we process the world through our senses. You know?
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yep. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And... I mean,
I don't immediately expect ourselves all of a sudden to jump out of ourselves and become butterflies.
Yeah,
maybe it's not a bad idea.
Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes has a new series out that you know about called Mother Night. And
right.
In one of them, a question is asked of her, or she goes into, what do these experiences, such as meeting your holy guardian angel through this ritual or any other way, what does all of this mean? What should I make of it, was the question. And she said, only insofar as it's useful. To her, human beings do have these experiences. It's part of being human. And that it signifies only insofar as it is useful to you in a positive way.
I
think that's a very pragmatic approach to spirituality and to spirit.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the problem with that, though. If you're pretty, you know, down and oriented to the world, what's going on, and you say what's useful, you're going to go by what you know. And it may mean that you're going to ignore what you could learn. So... yes and no. The transformation and the invitation that the Holy Guardian Angel represents is offering you things that you don't know, and shows a kind of knowledge and a kind of understanding of the deep structure of the world that you're not going to find if you make yourself insist upon the laws of time and space and a whole bunch of other things that we take, that we import, and, or that we are constructed by with our egos.
You know,
this is an offering of a reconstructing of yourself,
mm-hmm.
so that you can know the world in its truth, not just in its appearance.
And art is a great way of doing that. Does anyone watch Mad Men?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Think of that within the structure of what we're talking about. He recreated himself, etc. But also, and it is very, I find it a very spiritual show, especially our generation. I don't know whether the younger generation has the same feelings about the strict structures and restrictions of society as we were brought up with.
I guess you think we were contentious in the sun where everything is beautiful and at one, boy, wait until we get to Mars.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I must tell you, anyone see Inception yet?
No,
the movie?
No, not yet.
Oh, did you get the mythological analogy with Ariadne?
Oh, yeah, of course.
That it was really based on the Minotaur?
Yeah.
And every... And, do you know how many intelligent people did not get that, that I know of?
She's the one that's rescuing him from being trapped in his labyrinth.
Right.
Is Inception,
don't put away.
Is Inception a movie?
Yes, it's one of... my niece Andrea saw it, and she goes, Andrea, I just saw Inception. It's all about Ariadne, the Minotaur. And I go, Andrea, you're the first person that I spoke to who... Well, you know, amongst the regular people I deal with every day, who knew that?
Is it out now?
Yes, it is.
In fact, apparently you can also see it in IMAX.
Mm-hmm. In three dimensions, yeah. I may just go and see it with her. You know, again, she says, she thinks it's the greatest movie ever made.
Wow.
No, I don't think so.
Steering a CGI.
You don't think so, Troy?
No.
I think it's an interesting movie.
Interesting.
Okay. I'm glad you put up with me today, folks. I'm sorry that I was.
Oh, you were wonderful.
Yeah, I know.
So much. I've learned so much.
Okay.
And here I'm looking at Mad Men as restriction and freedom, and I'm getting all metaphysical over Mad Men. Isn't that strange?
And by the way, I also recommend, as far as new TV goes, is that AMC thing which is on before Mad Men, which is called Rubicon.
Yay, Rubicon!
Oh, Rubicon is spectacular.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like the music in that show.
Mm-hmm.
It really brings a lot of joy.
Oh, Rubicon music that's Warehouse 13 is Dead Like Me. Mm. Came from Dead Like Me, the music script, but not Rubicon, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, Dead Like Me was a wonderful
show. Oh, that was a great show.
I'll never understand why they took it off.
Mary...
what happened to that actress?
Yeah.
They did it. You know, they did do a Dead Like Me reprise movie or something.
They did?
Like happened a few years later. But
when was that?
It's available as an independent, 2-hour special type thing. And it happened a few years later. And of course, they had lost what's his name?
Mandy Patinkin.
Yeah, they lost him. He was going to do something else. But I thought she deserved. I really liked her, and even though she was, she didn't, wasn't the beauty queen.
Oh, she was great. She was excellent.
She was great. She was just wonderful. I really liked her.
Another one, Brimstone, I think they called it. That was another series that was with a devil, a very adorable devil. I never could understand why they got rid of it.
It's a shame.
And they got rid of Carnival also. I mean,
well, Carnival started to wander. It did.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know where they were going. Yeah,
they didn't know where they were going. Carnival got
yes,
worse.
Dead Like Me, Life After Death. You're right. 2009.
Yeah, there is. It's not incredibly good, but what it was, I think, was a flare for to see if they could revive it. There was a lot of people who know that that was a show that should have continued.
Oh, no question about it.
No.
I wonder what will happen with Rubicon, particularly since it's taking place in current time, as we understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And, his wife, Will's wife and daughter were killed in the Twin Trade Towers, 9/11, and he being late, he didn't pass. And then he was there. At any rate, with this mosque going up in theory, if it ever gets done, the whole argument back and forth about that, I wonder if they're going to bring it up in Rubicon, because it is germane to the character.
I think there's going to be a variety. It's going to be like a Chinese puzzle box collection of enigmas wrapped in whatever.
Nicholas loves that show because Will's boss, who passed, who was killed in the train, I forgot
David.
His name. David. David. His car is the same car my husband drives, Nicholas drives.
And of course, we think he's dead.
I wanted to say that, but I said, but thank you. Yeah, I had the same feeling.
Yeah.
And actually, even the message that he was, that his car was parked in 16, says, that's a message. It was deliberately set there as a message to this guy. Everything is a message.
Also, the broom. There's something with that broom.
Broom, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Hanging on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And the four-leaf clover, the three parts of the government.
And the
government.
This is going to be all the things.
And one was green and one was gold in color.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Okay, you guys.
Yeah, well, oh, this is going to be a good series.
Yes, yes. So, and we are wrapping up book three.
Yeah, it's book three of a single book.
Next week we complete book three and we'll be going on to book four. Book four, by the way, which is a white covered thing, is important for a whole bunch of reasons. Which I think you will see as she gets into.
Is that where she encounters Doc, as you said?
Well, they already encountered Death.
No, Doc.
Oh, Doc. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That was the series' greatest gift to me when I read it, because I was studying with Wald at the time. I mean, nobody could explain this to me, the Sephiroth that was not a Sephiroth, you know, 10, not 9, 10, not 11. At any rate, I'm very grateful to the series for the way Alan Moore presents stuff in it.
By the way, I am reading a little book now by Paul Hughes Barrow, who you probably know, The Tarot and the Mage.
Right.
The Magus, the Tarot and the Magus.
Mm-hmm.
And the,
the Celtic Cross book?
No. This is called Tarot and the Magus. It was out of print for a while. It's now back in print in England. It hasn't quite made its way across the pond.
I think I have that.
Well, I highly recommend it. It is a very magical and a very original, from my point of view. It's very different than the way most tarot is read. It's highly Kabbalistic, and his associations and it's, even though it's a relatively brief book, there are so many ways that he's showing how to read cards in ways that are fresh and unusual that it's incredible. It's one of the it's really one of the great books of genius that I've seen.
Is that the one with the cross, the
mm-hmm. Yeah, the Golden Dawn cross.
I do have that one. I do have it.
Oh, you have it?
I got it when it originally came out, and I read it then. Unfortunately, I couldn't draw on the material for you now.
Paul, is it? What's his name? Paul what?
Paul Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S hyphen Barrow, B-A-R-L-O-W.
I've spoken to him a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very, he was on Tarot-L.
Yeah, and he's also, I may have done I don't know if he's done anything recently. It might have been one of Donnelly's shows. I didn't hear it if he has. And, but there's some really interesting things going on. Donna Lee's shows are getting much more heavily instructional, so that her Beyond World show is sort of like a free class, and it can be a free class, which is more interesting than being a an advertisement. I'm getting tired for reading endless advertisements for your tarot decks. I can't afford them. Got to pay the rent, but beyond that, the one on the Celtic Cross from the other night was very interesting.
Well, he has a new book out. I think you recommended it to us.
Yeah, he wrote that with Catherine Chapman, Beyond the Celtic Cross.
Yeah.
I do recommend that book, but the one that's even better is this.
That is his opus. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it is, and actually, I mean, I can also see where there's a necessary sequel needs to be written at some point.
He comes across as a very humble guy.
He is. He's very accessible and humble.
Very
impressed.
Yes.
Yeah, but
impressed with him.
Yeah, but he also has. The work itself, as I said, it shows an incredible deep grasp structurally of the
card. I wasn't ready for him then. I'm going to have to reread him. It's amazing how, the time has to be right.
Yeah.
He has a website.
Yes, I do know his website.
Yeah, and now the thing is that the stuff that's on his website is kind of preparatory to appreciating this book. The book is it goes beyond what's on his website, but it's also a thing. So I recommend everything on his website is interesting. I've been looking at it for a month.
Do you know
a month or so
to talk about how humble a human being and how accessible he was? I emailed him that a friend of mine was going to England, and if he would just, you know, say hello to her when she went to the conference.
Uh-huh.
And he did.
Oh, yeah, of course.
He was a very nice individual, and he showed her around and everything. Almost, you know, totally, who's this peon compared to someone else, you know, that type of thing.
I think that's really one of the signs of civilization age. I don't know how to put it,
By the way, I just bought the book.
You just bought the book. Boy, that was quick.
It was $22.94 new, $56.94 used.
Whoa.
Well, what happened is that the...
First edition.
Yeah.
Well, before we go, I want to ask that Robert Powell's MP3, I can't download it. I can listen to it, but I can't download it.
You can listen to it, but you can't download it from my site. I can't help you there. You're Mac, and I just don't know enough about Mac systems to tell you how to get around it.
You have to save target as, but I don't know how to do that on the Mac.
I don't either. I can't seem to do it. I'll have to go over to the Mac store and find out.
As iTunes.
Yeah.
I don't have it set up as iTunes. No.
But you can save it on the Mac as iTunes.
Yeah, and MP3. Yeah, MP3 or MP4. Yeah. You could save it on the Mac as iTunes in your iTunes folder. Yes. That should work.
I'll try that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, because I have iTunes and I have a lot of MP3s on there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, it was a great day, Paul. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Thanks, Paul.
Oh, and,
really
and also,
amazing.
I do one thing I ask you to do here for me is pray for my mother. She's been under a lot of stress lately.
Oh, no.
I had to take her to the hospital last night. She's 95.
Oh.
But they're keeping her in the hospital for a couple of days, it looks like.
What's her name?
She's been under a lot of stress. Bernice.
Bernice, okay.
Thank you. And I'll be there to see her next few weeks, probably. I don't think we're in a serious crisis situation. But she just, I can understand her being out of a real stressful situation. She's in her decompression. It's causing her some physical ailment to pop out.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Paul.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
For the better now. I mean, I haven't necessarily told everybody here the full drama of it, but she's in a better place now, physically.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how it.
Paul, you're a magician. I'm going to tell you something now, and I think you'll gather what I'm saying. Sometimes the karma has to be fulfilled.
Yeah.
And taking her out of the karmic situation can cause other problems. So there has to be a type of healing within the karma of your two sisters and the relationship with your mother.
Yeah, well, that's true. And it's going to take... I'm going to have to see how it pans out over a little bit of time.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things to tell people, even in readings. Because they just don't get it. I swear, they just don't get it. A lot of people. You know, sometimes the worst has to be reenacted. You know.
Well, I want to thank everybody for a lively and overtime.
Right. Yeah, today was overtime.
We'll meet next week for Mars.
Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Blessings, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.